Good morning. Welcome to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin. And this week we're going to talk about healthy hearts. My guests are Dr. Robert Morse. He is a cardiologist at Providence North Coast Clinic. And Paulette McCoy, who is the public affairs person at Providence Eastside. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ann. Thanks for having us on your show.
You're welcome. Okay, so there's some pretty grim statistics. The leading cause of death in men is cardiovascular disease, and the leading cause of death in women over 65 is heart disease, and it's the third leading cause of death among women that are 25 to 44. People don't think about that. You know, they think, oh, it's for old men, right?
Exactly. It's a growing health problem in America is unrecognized cardiovascular disease, and it really runs across almost all age groups, all ethnic background. Mm-hmm. And the job for me and other healthcare providers is to educate people on their cardiovascular risk. In some instances, some people have a very skewed idea of what their true health risk is. For mm-hmm. example, women, perception about breast cancer and other health concerns, when actually their greatest chance of death is cardiovascular related.
Mm-hmm. I think I heard a statistic that one in two or one in three people over 50 have some level of cardiovascular disease with possibly no symptoms.
Depending on the status of their personal risk factors, certainly mm-hmm. that's true. Mm-hmm. And one of the growing problems in America, recognized by most healthcare organizations like the American College of Cardiology, American College of Physicians, is the growth of obesity in America, which is responsible for the growth in diabetes. And some of this is starting even in teenagers mm-hmm. who are now becoming diabetics as a teenager because of obesity.
Right. So maybe this would be a good time to talk about some of these risk factors, because I think a lot of people take a very passive approach to health, which is they wait till they have an MI. They wait till they have a stroke. And then they say, oh, I guess I should clean up my act. Last year, someone around here had a massive heart attack, quit smoking in the hospital, was doing great, and months later, smoking again. And, you know, I hit myself on the head and go, wait a minute. That's like the number one thing that you have control over, that I think it's like the worst thing you could do for your heart, right?
That's exactly right. The way to break it down is to the modifiable risk factors and the non-modifiable. Can't do anything about whether you're a man or a woman. Can't really do anything about your age. Can't really do anything about your parents and your grandparents. But what you can do is you can monitor your weight. Weight is a very important. Most of these risk factors have numbers attached to them, and the body mass index is the number for weight. And the optimal body mass index for most people is around 25, and obesity begins with a body mass index of 30.
And it's if someone doesn't know their BMI, it's easy. You can go online, just type BMI in your Google search, and you look at the chart, your height and your weight. And, you know, it's not the end-all be-all for everything, but it gives you a snapshot. If you're over 30, you're obese, and you're at an increased risk for dropping dead of a heart attack.
Right, exactly. And then high blood pressure, real simple measurement. Almost everybody has access to blood pressure measurement. They can go into a drugstore. They mm-hmm. can, you know, get mm-hmm. their own equipment. That's a real simple thing to do, check your blood pressure. If your mm-hmm. blood pressure is above 135 over 85, you probably have high blood pressure to one extent or another. And the higher it is above that, the more serious it can be, because higher readings are associated with development of left ventricular hypertrophy and other more serious damage to the heart muscle.
And that's certainly in the modifiable.
Definitely.
I mean, by a million means.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So next would be your cholesterol numbers. Most people over the age of 40 should have, at some point, a screening blood test to check their lipids to see if they have, certainly if they have a family history, that's one of the things that you would do right off the bat. And the relative risk of the cholesterol numbers is related to an extent about other, you know, health risk factors that you have. So if you're otherwise healthy, you're slim, you don't have high blood pressure, all you have is a relatively high cholesterol, well, that can probably be modified again with diet and doesn't necessarily require medical treatment. But the thing that most people don't also recognize is that the risk factors are not really additive. They're really logarithmic to an extent. So if you have one risk factor, it's fine. If you have two, your risk goes up three times. If you have three risks, your risk goes up 10 times. So these risk factors are cumulative and somewhat logarithmic.
And, you know, the irony is they kind of work together. When you get overweight and you become, you know, pre-diabetic, then you become diabetic. Now you're really snowballing your risk and you're really moving into the danger zone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And well, so many people think, though, if I have high blood pressure or high cholesterol, I can just get the medicine and then I'll be fine and I can do whatever I want. That's not a good idea.
The important thing to recognize and something that I talk extensively about is that the lifestyle changes, therapeutic lifestyle change, weight loss, eating healthy, it's all part of essentially the medical treatment plan. And in and of themselves, you're correct. The medicines alone oftentimes cannot achieve the therapeutic goals with either blood pressure or cholesterol or diabetes without the person losing weight, eating healthy, exercising.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's, I don't know. I think we're sort of at the crux of most Americans would rather just take a pill and go to fast food and don't bother me with, I don't have time to exercise. I hear that every day. I don't have time and I don't have time to cook. I don't really even have time to eat. You know, like I eat in the car, I drive from home to
a very interesting, I don't know if you saw it, there's a family practice doctor at the medical school in McGill up in Canada who devised it's on YouTube, and he basically, the crux of it is, can you not sleep, sit, eat for half an hour a day? You know, that you have 23 and a half hours a day to do all these things that are not so healthy. And if for only half an hour, if you can get up and move, that you, a huge impact. And if you look at it from a therapeutic standpoint, it has greater power than medicine and certainly at a much, you know, less cost.
Well, absolutely. Years ago, I went to a medical conference. There was a speaker who is ran a diabetic clinic at Woodland Park, and he gave all his patients pedometers, and he said, you will walk for 45 minutes a day. And he said it was the most effective intervention, much more effective than the blood sugar lowering medications or anything else that he could do, was to get them to do that. They had better control of their blood sugar. And unfortunately, that clinic, that whole facility closed. Hopefully he's doing that good work somewhere else. It was so cool to see his numbers because they were great. Of course, we're going against the trend of this humongous obesity thing that's rolling down the whole world.
And starting with the kids.
Mm. Yes, yeah.
There's that new program out, and I don't know if it came from Michelle Obama or from a health organization, but it's called Give Me 60, and the kids wear the 60 minutes of play a day.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a great program.
You mean not 60 minutes on the computer?
No, it's 60 minutes of play. And if you think about it, when I was little, we were outside all the time.
All day.
We were playing kick the can. We were doing all the stuff all around this neighborhood right here, you know, and it was just amazing. We didn't hardly watch any TV, or of course we didn't have any of the electronic stuff, but and it was fun.
Right, and there was almost no obesity. The fat kid was like, you know, one in
pretty
50.
Rare. Yeah,
right.
Pretty rare.
And now we have
it's the opposite.
Yeah, what is it? What's the obesity rate in kids?
I think it's 33%.
I don't have that number on the top of my head.
It's a
huge problem.
Yeah,
and along with it is, as I said before, a growing number of teenagers with adult onset diabetes, which is a very frightening phenomenon.
Right, they're not supposed to have that.
Because if you start as a diabetic at 15, your future prognosis is very grim in terms of the early onset of development of other cardiovascular problems. And
right.
So it could shift the curve in a way that we're not really necessarily prepared from at a time when, if anything, national policy is to, decrease overall expenditures for, healthcare. that if we have to start, treating 20 and 30-year-olds for acute coronary syndromes because they started having diabetes at age 15, then that's really going to be a very difficult problem to deal with from a public health standpoint.
Well, right. We're going to have long-term, chronically ill, disabled people with very expensive healthcare needs. Yeah, it's not pretty. And they're going to have increased mortality at a younger age.
Oh, exactly.
But they're not going to keel over, though. They're going to linger for years and years in needing tons of interventions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're going to be the ones that go to the hospital every week. Well, maybe those new, group... working with the most medically fragile, those groups, social worker and all the doctors and the whole team, working with those people that are always needing medical care, maybe that'd make a difference. Maybe the social worker can do what the doctor can't, which is to get the patient moving.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go for a walk.
But oftentimes it starts with the parents. It starts with having knowledge and awareness about healthier ways to live. I mean, I think when people who are in their middle ages have children and they eat healthy at home, then that's how children learn, what they're supposed to be eating. If they're eating macaroni and cheese every night, then they're going to grow up thinking that that's the appropriate way to eat,
mm-hmm.
and not, have fruits and vegetables and things of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right. I'm amazed how many people don't eat fish at all, don't know what asparagus and avocado are. They've never seen a kiwi. Kids, and you think, what do they eat at their house?
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing fresh living. I mean, we live in a place where there's all this bounty in the mm-hmm. land and the sea, and they don't eat it. Although, last week I gave a nutrition talk to the Astoria High School swim team, and I asked how many people like fish and eat it, and most of the kids raised their hands. Usually when I ask that, one reluctant person raises their hand. So I thought that was
good.
Yeah, that was hopeful.
I think involvement, that's why involvement in sports activities is very important for children. My kids were swimmers also, and when they were young. And most athletic, the people involved in training and coaching do have a pretty good working knowledge of nutrition and pass that along to, the kids on their teams and say, what did you eat for dinner last night? And if it's McDonald's, they're probably going to get a lecture about, mm-hmm. that's not going to help you today when we're in the water swimming or on the football field playing. And
mm-hmm.
So that's a good mechanism for more children to get the knowledge about nutrition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's take a break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about soda pop, caffeinated drinks, maybe heavy sugar load, and things like that. You're listening to your Health. I'm Ann Goldin. I'm with cardiologist Robert Morse and public affairs person at Providence Seaside, Paulette McCoy. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
listening to To Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin, and we're talking about a healthy heart. This is February, which is Healthy Heart Month, and my guests are Dr. Robert Morse, who's a cardiologist at Providence North Coast Clinic, and Paulette McCoy, the PR person at Providence Seaside. And I want to talk about the prevalence and the relationship between soda pop and, obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular disease. Certainly, I have seen mothers with babies in
strollers
pouring soda pop into their sippy cup.
And I almost wanted to grab it from him and take it away.
I wanted to yell. I know. There's sometimes when you just think,
what are you doing?
Right. Like, I mean, I've been told I was rude and out of order, that I shouldn't say anything, but that's insane. But it's no less insane at any age.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a clear correlation. Even when people say, well, it's diet soda. Well, unfortunately, studies have shown that people that drink diet soda actually gain more weight.
And there were three studies a couple years ago that all showed that one diet soda a week increases the risk of developing diabetes by, I think it was 2/3. I mean, it was like staggering.
Some research has indicated that there's a miscommunication between hormone receptors in the stomach and the brain that confuse you as to how much food you've eaten. The chemical leptin, which tells your brain you're full, and if you're sipping on soda or drinking soda throughout the day, that signal becomes distorted or confused, and that's why diet soda in particular can make you gain weight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know. I've had people argue till the end of the earth. I say, look, just go off it for a month. Oh, I lost 10 pounds. Well, duh. I was right. You were wrong.
Yeah, and I read that your body doesn't know the difference between diet soda and regular soda because the artificial sugar in it, and I don't know all the chemistry about it, but it's not good for you.
Oh, it's really bad.
Because your body doesn't know, and it's just it's pouring all that sugar, and it still raises your level.
The single most important thing someone who has any issues with their weight could do is get rid of all the soda, diet soda, any of those. Drink water.
Drink water.
Should be your primary beverage during the day.
Right, right. And those things, people think that all that stuff improves their athletic performance, which I don't know where that came from. I mean, caffeine does make you more alert, but...
Oh, you mean the energy drinks?
Yeah.
Aren't they just loaded with sugar, too.
They're just loaded with sugar or aspartame.
And caffeine.
And caffeine, yeah. They don't really help much. I mean, actually, I think they make you more tired and more fat and more at risk. So do you have a sense of what's happening with all these teenage boys that dropped? I mean, there's not millions of them, but that just dropped dead on the court?
Well, what I've noticed over time, I've been a cardiologist now for about 20 years, and certainly every time that happens, there's a great deal of anxiety. And then a little time goes by and everybody sort of forgets about it. From a population standpoint, there seems to be fixed epidemiologic numbers of these incidents happening that are related to certain genetic conditions such as hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, perhaps right ventricular dysplasia. To date, mass screening programs, which is what people seem to want to have after every one of these occur, has not in all instances shown that you change the detection rate or the outcomes. And so several studies, like in European countries, where they just decide on a smaller scale because they're smaller countries that they're going to say do EKGs on every athlete who participates. And in a fairly large study, I believe it was in Spain, didn't really show that they changed outcomes or mortality by the screening program. And so that's really the question, is how best to look out for the health care of young athletes, but also do it in an effective way, a cost-effective way, and a way that's going to actually change outcomes. Mm-hmm. What typically happens sometimes when you do a screening program is you identify a lot of false positives, which are people with either abnormal EKGs or other issues, and the cost of, you know, proving essentially that they are healthy can be quite expensive, and certainly if you looked at it on a population scale.
Mm-hmm. So there's really no way to know.
Well, certainly there's relationships to within families.
Okay, well, right. If the parent, the father, and the grandfather had heart attacks at an early age, that might be someone to check. But in the broad population, a lot of time people say, well, there's no incident. I mean, we had a death here. Mm-hmm. God, I don't know, 13 years ago?
Oh, swimming.
Yeah.
And
nothing was ever found wrong with the kid. And it's left this lingering feeling of, why did his heart stop? You know, I mean, and the people who knew him, which we did, and all the circles that, you know, his family was in, are like, there's always been this question of how could a healthy kid just have his heart stop beating?
Well, the commonest things in that particular situation, if you exclude hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, right ventricular dysplasia, is coronary anomalies, that they either have one of their coronary arteries that takes an aberrant course. Perhaps instead of running between the pulmonary artery and the aorta, and under certain circumstances, essentially they have no blood flow to part of their heart. That's a fairly common reason for some of those if they do go to an autopsy.
So you would see that?
Coronary anomalies are very common. I was in the military for 10 years. That's where I did all my training. And we had a regular occurrence of a young enlisted troop who would drop during PT or and they would be rushed in, and their evaluation would typically, in that population, that was one of the commonest things that we would find, is that they had a coronary anomaly.
So that might account for it. But then if you would see that in this case that I'm thinking of, the autopsy showed nothing.
Right. The most important thing that, and again, my children were swimmers and ran cross country. The thing that I always tried to pay attention to, or when school officials asked my opinions about how best to approach this, I think the important thing is that at most of these high school athletic events, that there should be a well-developed participation from emergency medical services. And, high school football, since the mid-70s or so, has done a very good job of having, ambulance crews stationed at games. But I think that should be extended to more athletic events. And if you had immediate responders to a situation on a field or at a pool or a basketball game, I think some of these children would be saved. But what I've seen, there was a few instances just while I was at a parent at a swim meet, and something would occur, and there was no organized approach to what needed to be done, and they didn't have equipment available, and certainly where I was in Las Vegas, I wrote letters to the Clark County, commissioners regarding the necessity, to have appropriate equipment at all, these athletic events.
Mm-hmm.
So if they had like an AED.
Yes. If you had
and
training on it. Yeah, it can't just be sitting on the wall.
Right, and it has to be up to date. It has to be. Do you have to test it every once in a while?
It's kind of like a fire extinguisher. If you don't know how, if it's hanging on the wall, but if you don't know how to use it,
right?
It's the same type of thing.
Right. Okay. So that would be a piece of equipment that might be good to have in a gym.
Oh, I think it's been shown again and again. Interestingly enough, quite a number of years ago, I was in practice in Las Vegas for 10 years in the casino industry. Realized very quickly how important having that equipment stationed at various locations throughout all the casinos. And a study was done a number of years ago showing that survivability of cardiac arrest in a casino is one of the best of anywhere. So your chance of surviving a cardiac arrest if you're in a casino is seemingly good.
Okay, so because you have to plan your heart attack.
They've got AEDs everywhere.
They've
got people trained how to do them. And, you know, they do a very good job at that. The airline industry does the same thing. They have AEDs on all flights now. And
the staff are trained.
So it's good technology.
Of course, on the other hand, the casino is causing the heart attacks with all the
either losing or winning.
Right, the excess of eating and the excess of alcohol, which we didn't talk about, is, you know, excess alcohol is another factor in.
But it's bad for business when someone dies in your establishment. So
that's true. Any establishment. Okay, there is an event coming up. Let's talk about that event, Paulette.
Okay, it's Thursday, February 9th, just 2 days from today.
Okay,
and it's at Star of the Sea Auditorium, and that's on the corner of 14th and Grand. Mm-hmm. For those that may not know Star of the Sea, and it's after work. Come on over, because the we'll start at 6 o'clock, mm-hmm. and we'll go to 8, and Dr. Morris will give a presentation, and then our registered dietitian, Beth Schwenk, will also give a presentation about nutritious meals. She'll have a fun plate that she's going to give out to everybody.
Oh, yum.
Yeah, and it's a real plate that they can take home, and it shows the division of how much fruit and vegetables should be on your plate, you know, how much of the carb, and then how much of the what's the other one?
Protein.
Thank you. Yes.
And so, okay, so there's going to be food?
Yes, there'll be healthy snacks, samples, mm-hmm. and there's going to be a guide that everyone will get to heart-healthy living, and that also has recipes in it. And there's a site that you can go to actually test your risk for heart attack.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so all that information will be given
out. Okay, and the cost is?
Free.
Free, good cost. Okay, so this Thursday at the Star of the Sea Auditorium.
But we do want you to call in so that we'll have enough food and prizes for everybody.
Okay.
Because we also are giving away some prizes. And the number is 800-562-8964. That's 800-562-8964. So please call in and register. It's real simple. And we hope to see everybody there, because you're going to learn a lot. You're going to get some great tools to take home with you.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. Well, the more people learn. All right. So did we miss any of the risk factors? I mean, we've touched on smoking, overeating, eating fast food, soda pop.
We talked a little bit about alcohol at the casinos.
Yeah.
But
diabetes.
Yeah. Yes.
Let's see.
I think with alcohol, they say that women should just limit your to one drink. And that's like a glass of wine is not 10 ounces, you know.
Oh, it's not?
No, it isn't.
And then for men, two.
Men, two drinks.
Two drinks a day.
A day. Right. I mean, if that's what you do.
And they count for the calories, because
that's it.
Alcohol is a sugar, and it counts against your carbohydrates. And it's a relatively empty, it again is an empty sugar.
Right.
And so it's processes just like soda pop would in your body. It raises your blood sugar.
Well, if you have straight vodka, that doesn't do a whole lot to your blood sugar. But if you're drinking daiquiris, that's like soda pop kind of sugar.
So you have the juice with it, you know, the screwdriver or the the cranberry juice with vodka.
Right, it raises the glycemic index hugely, and exercise, we can't. I mean, that's certainly something everyone can do.
Well, you touched on that's something that I talk to a lot of patients about, the pedometer. I think that's a very useful piece of equipment. Mm-hmm. The studies on that came out of Japan. They're very innovative in that regard. They came up with the 10,000 step program, and it's been modified a little bit because some people, 10,000 is quite a big number, and so the more recent recommendation is around 5,000 to 7,500 steps a day, and that seems to be attainable for most people, and it's what you do throughout the day. And back to the doctor in Canada that's done a very good job, it's being active. So if you have a choice between sitting and standing, stand. If you have the opportunity to even walk outside for a few minutes, go walk outside for a few minutes, park the car further from the store, take the stairs. If you have a choice between the stairs and the elevator, it all counts. And it's just simply being active.
I think that's great. And of course, once you start doing that, then you want to do more. And the idea is to gradually do more and more so that you are getting more and more fit. Take care of your heart. Do something every day. Thank you very much. My guests have been Dr. Robert Morris, a cardiologist at Providence North Coast Clinic, and Paulette McCoy, the PR person at Providence Seaside. And all kinds of folk will be coming up. We've got some NPR headline news. And next week, Kathy Fulton and Diane Pappas will be here. We'll be talking about midwinter garden chores for digging the dirt. Have a great week.